From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something that you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Welcome to this Tuesday edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Palm, Neil McCready, coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio. Today, we're going to talk with VandySports.com publisher Chris Lee, discuss a little Commodore baseball, probably some football, because we always do that, and whatever strikes us with one of the nicest guys in the business. So we'll get to Chris in about 15 minutes. Also,
You're saying Chris is one of the nicest guys in the business?
Yeah,
I thought you were talking about me.
Well, you're fine, too.
Okay, go ahead.
All right.
Sorry.
You keep pissing off national writers, but otherwise you're fine.
We'll get to that in a minute.
All right. Yeah, we will. Shea Patterson back in the news. Thomas Mars. Really, it's
Groundhog Day is what it is. Yeah, never freaking stops.
It's comfortable at this point. It's like a warm blanket put over you in the cold.
I've never thought of it like that, but okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Familiarity, you know. Breeds
contempt.
Content, it does.
So. Contempt.
Contempt. Okay.
Yes. Not content.
Contempt. All right. We'll discuss
apparently
that.
What they teach at Hatley and Ruston are two different things we just learned. Learn your cliches. I don't know. We had two completely different cliches there.
Yeah. All right. Ole Miss baseball plays in Pearl tonight. They play the Southern Miss Golden Eagles. Houston Roth on the mound for the Rebels. J.C. Keys again for the Golden Eagles. And Mike flipping the rotation back. Ryan Rawlison on Friday. Brady Feigl on Saturday. And James McArthur on Sunday this weekend in Nashville with the previously mentioned Commodores. You can check out the Oxford Exxon, Highway 6 West in Oxford. The proud sponsors of this here podcast for a long time now. Appreciate all that the Craddock family does, and includes giving you some lunch specials at $4.99 every single day, ribs at night, pick them up on the way home, make dinner easy there at the Oxford Exxon. If you got one of those bottomless refill cups, 49 cents, you can fill that puppy up too and have a fountain drink at your disposal all day long. And again, coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio.
We are. Clark Ford is in Amory, Mississippi. 662-257-1900 is the number. Call that number. Ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you are looking for. And then send him a quote. He'll send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. It's that simple. You'll get your quote, and then it's kind of up to you. You can take the quote, shop it. That's your prerogative. Or you can go ahead and let Corey and the people at Clark Ford do for you what they've done for so many other listeners of our podcast, including me, even though I didn't get the deal I'm going to tell you about at the end, because politics with Clark Ford. Anyway, you will get a deal. You get a great deal, great service after the sale, no hassle, it's just easy, and then make it even better. You, unlike me, can tell Corey, hey, I heard about Clark Ford on the podcast, and you will get $500 off. Corey said that I didn't hear about Clark Ford on the podcast. He said that I heard about Clark Ford from him, which is a technicality. But regardless, it's a great deal. You'll love your new product. I do. And the service is fantastic. Delivery options, all of those things at Clark Ford and Amory, 662-257-1900.
It's like the radio promotions where employees of the company can't win.
Yeah, it's kind of like that.
It's kind of like that. You know, the ninth caller at 9, unless you are somehow affiliated with the host or the producers of said radio show.
Yeah, it's kind of like that. It's
like,
fine.
Like, I don't think I could win the LB's gift certificate from Beer Garden.
No, I can tell you now that you could not. I would make that call, and no, you would not.
There you go.
Unless you were coming to cook here, at which point maybe you could win.
Duck poppers on the stove. We'll see what happens. Yeah. But anyway. All right. So yesterday, look, we can debate the legitimacy or the relevance of Ole Miss's number one ranked recruiting class as of right now. But regardless of that point, I'm just amazed. Thomas Barr's back in the news when something happens to be going on, something positive for the Rebels, and you know, Mars and...
I didn't make that connection until just now, and I'm like, well, that's kind of interesting.
You know, suddenly, let's get some news back out there. It is because he called some water-carrying reporters that he knows. He's got a couple of them. He can alternate calls depending on the day of the week.
Yeah.
And he says that Ole Miss recently, when they had to submit their opinion of the Shea Patterson transfer, are objecting to Shea Patterson's story as far as the sequence of events and the condition of the football program that is causing, in Patterson's words, his said transfer. A couple different things here.
Yeah, because we got about 15 minutes realistically. And
yeah.
There's a lot of stuff to get to.
Okay, here. The first thing is that Ole Miss's opinion has little to no relevance whatsoever on what the NCAA is going to do with Shea Patterson. It is an NCAA decision to grant or not grant him immediate eligibility at the University of Michigan.
Why would the NCAA even ask the opinion of the former school?
I don't know. They always
Isn't
do.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah. Why?
I assume there's some semblance of process to it where you're just saying, hey, he's saying this. Do you agree with that? Not like, is he telling the, you know what I mean? Like, kind of whatever. But here's the deal. Ole Miss, the best I understand it, because I don't know. Nothing's been leaked to me.
Well, this is where Ole Miss, I'm going to interrupt you quickly. Yeah. If you're listening, Ole Miss, this is where you leak something. If you want to choose to go a different media, you need to get your story out. I don't know if you've noticed, but exemplary cooperation did not work. So put the story out.
Allowing Mars and Dennis Dodd to dictate the conversation.
Yeah, because they're making Ole Miss out to be the bad guy
here. Well, I mean, Dodd going so far as Ole Miss trying to block. Ole Miss has no ability to block what's so freaking
out. Oh, Dennis Dodd's an idiot. I mean, let me say this first. Well, Dennis Dodd is a complete idiot. And if you're out there, Dennis, you can at me. That's fine. We can have this debate on Twitter. He's never struck me as a particularly smart guy. He's a nice guy, and he must have gone to the right college or something. Did he go to Missouri?
I don't know where Dennis Dodd is.
Columbia or somewhere. I mean, so Dennis, you're further along in the field than I'll ever be. You're a success. I'm a failure. All of those things. But for you to write that Ole Miss is trying to block, Ole Miss can't block.
Missouri.
There you go. I'm telling you. I had a conversation with someone just the other day. Their son's thinking about going into journalism, and I said, go to Missouri. Go to Missouri. The end. It is like the damn golden ticket. You don't even have to be good. You don't even have to be competent. You go to Missouri's 1-in-3 shot, you're a national writer. Andy Staples went to Florida, by the way. This is not referring to Andy Staples. Not in any way referring to Andy Staples. I have a ton of personal and professional respect for Andy Staples. So any lumping of national media that goes on from here on out does not refer to Andy Staples, George Schroeder.
Stephen Godfrey.
I have tons of respect for Stephen.
There's a couple more.
Yeah, if I think of them, I'll let Chris Lowe, Ed Ashoff.
It's mostly about it's a triumvirate that we're...
Quadumvirate.
Okay, yeah. Is it a quadumvirate? Is that four?
I'm not sure if that's a word. I went to ULM, not Missouri.
Okay. Anyway, all right. Best I understand, Ole Miss could reply with, yeah, sure, no, or indifference. Yeah, and really no opinion. Without understanding any of the circumstances, throw that caveat in there, which... probably should deem my opinion moving forward irrelevant. But nonetheless, my podcast, I can do what I want.
Damn right.
Indifference would have been a fairly popular thing just from the standpoint of it probably to some extent eliminates this dumb PR move by Mars while also not going, hey, yeah, Shea, go play at Michigan. We'll see you in a bowl game. And you know what I mean? Like, whatever. It's an easy middle ground there for a lot of ways. However, I do understand Ole Miss defending itself because – I swear, I need to really just record this segment and just keep playing it over and over and over again for the last year. I think it would help my sanity. Because the sequence of events that were in the final NOA and in the final ruling, we keep getting, not us, but the public continues to keep interpreting that as what happened during the first NOA, during that signing day weekend when everything was blowing up for the very first time. Shea's argument doesn't even necessarily hold water to that because Shea was already on campus at that point. Shea was an early signee that had enrolled in January prior to the NOA becoming public. And with that being the case, he wasn't even a dude that was making a decision in 4 or 5 days. He was already here. His brother was on the staff. It defies logic that he didn't have an understanding of what was going on from an NCAA perspective.
And given the involvement of his dad in the recruiting process, it's difficult for me to believe that they didn't read the document. Now, maybe they weren't smart enough to read the document and interpret it. I don't know. There's the text from, is it Hugh to Shea that are
yeah.
ridiculous.
Yeah.
I'm in the minority here. I think Ole Miss could have fired Hugh Freeze with cause, and it would have made the whole thing go away. Now, I know that's not popular because Hugh Freeze remains like a damn cult hero here. I get it. That would have solved the problem. Draft night, you fire him and you go, hey, it's with cause. We can't do this stuff. Moving on. And I think the whole NCAA thing goes away. Regardless, I've never believed Patterson could really play the I was misled card. And I don't know what is in some of the lawsuits. I don't know what's in some of the – I mean, he represents these players as an attorney. I don't know what the end game is. And so Ole Miss has to be careful what it admits to.
Well, see, that was the problem. If Ole Miss supports Shea Patterson, it's admitting fault and guilt there for whatever that means moving forward, which I'm not sure. Lawsuits, hell, potentially even the NCAA using it in the appeals process because they can make up their own rules as they go for the most part.
Always have.
So that was never an option, and that would have been dumb anyway. But it's, do you defend yourself and then get the PR hit of Mars going, see, they're trying to blah, 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 or just saying indifferent and moving on with your day? Mars, you know, giving Dodd a lot of good quotes yesterday.
What were some of the quotes? I never read it.
Patterson is seeking a waiver of the NCAA's traditional blah, blah, blah. The approval of such waiver would presumably have a significant impact on the Wolverines' 2018 season. Quote, whoever wrote that response for Ole Miss either wasn't paying attention last year or had a case of selective amnesia, Mars said. Yeah.
Selective amnesia.
Another person anonymously quoted as saying it's all flat-out deliberate lies.
From Ole Miss?
Yeah.
Yeah. Dodd reach out to Ole Miss?
I don't know. I'm not noticing that, but I'm not really reading it very closely either. Then it details all the stuff they reported back in February, of course, with more Marsh says stuff. So, anyway. This should not have any impact, actually, on Ole Miss moving forward whatsoever. It's all periphery nonsense at this point.
It's not have any impact on Ole Miss at all. Except for the fact that you wonder whether their lawsuit's coming from Mars, claiming that these players were disenfranchised or something. I don't know. I'm totally – here's the crazy thing about it. I'm being honest because right now, I mean, it's not football anymore. I don't have to be over there. I'm not buddy-buddy with the staff the way some people are where I'm dependent on information. Sean Patterson walks around the damn building wearing Ole Miss stuff. I saw him just the other day. Saw him on Thursday.
Was an employee.
I know. It's bizarre.
A little awkward, isn't it?
It's weird.
I don't know.
And if I were Ole Miss, I wouldn't give a damn whether Shea Patterson's the quarterback at Michigan or not. I wouldn't care. Who cares? Now, I realize I come from a different place on this because as a fundamental rule, I support kids' ability to transfer and play anywhere. I don't like the transfer year and all that stuff. I think it's, to me, there's something in that process that I find unpalatable. Regardless, what difference does it make for Ole Miss? They don't play Michigan. They're not going to a bowl game as of now. There's no chance they're going to see Shea Patterson next year. Don't worry about it. Does it really matter to Ole Miss whether Van Jefferson plays at Florida next year or not? Does it really matter to Ole Miss whether the street kid plays at UAB or not? Does it matter? To whom? Why? I don't think it does. If I were Ole Miss, my response to all of it would have been, I don't care. Whatever. But the fact that they objected to this makes you wonder, like, but, you know, Tyner's not there anymore. They went out, so I assume this is a different attorney handling this. Maybe somebody said, you know what? No, we're going to fight. The fans want us to fight. The alums want us to fight. The boosters want us to fight. Maybe we need to fight. Hell of a time to pick the fight up, but whatever.
Well, I mean, yeah,
I'm lost. This is where, again, as an institution, if I'm running Ole Miss right now, we're leaking. Wouldn't you be leaking?
You'd be a big leaker, period, wouldn't you? When just in general, yeah,
absolutely. I would use the media as a tool.
Yeah.
Damn right. I give Mars that. Mars wanted a story out. He got it out.
He did. No.
Got him. Where did our boy Wolken go to school? He didn't go to Mizzou, did he?
I don't know where Wolken went. Don't know.
I know 40 went to Mizzou.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, we're going to go to Chris Lee in a second here on the Billy's Pecans Hotline.
Go Tigers.
Yeah. Do what?
Go Tigers.
Yeah. Go Tigers. That's not a school Campbell's considering.
Not right now. Right now she's going into medical stuff.
Oh, that, so we're doing that now?
I think her father's overall skepticism and negativity about journalism has impacted some of the way she viewed college.
Gotcha. All right. Before we go to Chris.
I did my job.
Podcast brought to you in part by Mastercoast Lawn and Landscape, 662-607-7773. Been using them for a while. Do a fantastic job. You can find them online at mastercoastlawn.com. And when you sign an annual contract, get a pressure washing for free of your driveway and sidewalks. You don't really realize how dirty they are until they are clean. Also, a pressure washing job of over 2,000 square feet, $50 off for that. They'll get your flower beds and landscaping ready for the warmer months and more there with MasterCuts. Again, 662-607-7773.
The podcast also brought to you by Oxford University Bank. OUB is locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB is offering one-year CDs at 1.75% annual percentage yield, three-year triple option CDs paying 2.01% APY. With the three-year term, customers can deposit once during the term, withdraw once during the term, and or bump the rate if OUB's three-year rate rises. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured. Rebel Nation, 2018 is the year of the fan. Ole Miss Athletics wants to showcase your stories and recognize you, the Ole Miss fan base. Exciting prizes and experiences throughout the year will be featured on omyearofthefan.com and updated often, so be sure to visit omyearofthefan.com. Chris Lee and other guests join us on the Billy's Pecans Hotline. Billy's Pecans is a great place to go to do all of your corporate giving. Billy's Pecans knows the perfect crunch for every palate, whether it's a gift for a corporate client, presents for the staff, or tokens of goodwill for a referral. From 5 to 5,000 orders, they'll handle it all with expertise and excellence, all with their signature Southern style and with items at every price point. You simply can't choose wrong. Homemade treats, easy ordering, professionally packaged, shipped fresh and direct. It's the process of doing business with Billy's Pecans and more, and it couldn't be more satisfying. Billy'sPecans.com, B-I-L-L-I-E-S, Pecans.com, or 1-800-624-7404. Now to the aforementioned Billy's Pecans Hotline. Chris Lee of VandySports.com joins us on the Oxford Exxon podcast.
Chris, welcome to the show this morning. Appreciate your time. Ole Miss and Vanderbilt this weekend from Nashville. And looks like Vanderbilt's had a bit of an uneven season to this point. They got two important ones against Georgia, but going into it, I thought, is this a team with a lot of college baseball players or a team with a lot of pro prospects? And I sort of thought they might get off to a slow start and get better as the year goes on. And to this point, I don't know that I'm overly wrong.
It has been the weirdest year. I almost think they've got a better chance to beat Ole Miss this weekend and take the series than they did beat Western Kentucky this afternoon, because they have lost five midweek games in a row, and I think all those teams on the wrong side of 100 RPI, they've got like more bad losses than I think the top 15 RPI teams combined. But other than Florida, they've been good on the weekends, and Florida's kind of got their number. I mean, not to mention Florida is one of the best college baseball teams I've ever seen. But it's weird because Chase, I went into the season saying that if they could just sort of, you know, I was concerned for them about Duke because Duke's a good team, probably headed to the NCAA tournament. They opened with them. I thought Duke's got more veterans. They might lose that one. They've got those Houston, those L.A. trips coming up, and I thought they could get in one of those holes where they're, if it goes wrong, they're five, six games below 500, and then they've got LSU and Florida and Mississippi State on the road, staring at them in the SEC, and I thought, you know, you really don't want to dig a hole going into that. But it was just the opposite. They played really well against those teams, and then they started losing midweek games to Belmont and Lipscomb and all sorts of teams they shouldn't be losing to. And, you know, if they just win half those games right now, they're probably a host because they're playing so well on the weekends. They're picking up big wins there. But it's a weird situation, and they seem to play better against the better teams.
Yeah, Vanderbilt coming off a six-game losing streak before winning those two against Georgia. RPI at 26 right now. It's fairly a miracle it's even that high, to be honest.
It is, and it's been weird. You know, on top of that, they had a game last week against MTSU where they actually were winning 7-4 when the game ended. They hit a grand slam with two outs in the bottom or in the top of the eighth on the road, but then thunderstorms rolled in. They reverted the score back to what it had been before that, so that was like their fifth loss, and then they lose the game to Georgia where they're up, I guess, 2-0 heading into the eighth, and they kick the ball around and that kind of thing and lose that one. But really they seem to play more like I think what we expected the last two games, and I'm anxious to see what they do today.
Yeah, I'm sure Corbin was real pleased in about you know, 10 minutes after that MTSU final decision. But, you know, Vanderbilt, if you wanted to buy stock in somebody, I think it would be the Doors, because, like I said, I think they're just going to get better as the year goes on, as the players kind of gel a little bit. But that schedule, it's fairly soft the rest of the way after Ole Miss. That'll be a test this weekend. But I know Missouri's better, but still nothing special. South Carolina way down. Auburn is kind of mize and nothing. Tennessee's not very good. And then Kentucky's been scuffling. This thing could still work out somehow for, you know, the little engine that could that is Vanderbilt baseball.
You know, it can, but Tennessee has given him fits. It's weird. It's like they will, especially in Knoxville, I don't know when the last time they won a series in Knoxville is, and even when they play at home, they seem to find a way to lose one of those. I think Missouri, we're all kind of waiting to see what Missouri is. It's had a few of those starts where they get off to a hot start, and they're in contention for an NCAA bid in the first half of the season. Then it falls off. And then Kentucky and Auburn, to me, Chase, are confusing because they were pretty dominant before they got into the SEC, and it hasn't gone as well, especially Kentucky the last weekend. You know, that's a team that's really talented. That you know, I think if they get it together, they're one of the better teams in the league. So it seems like it's an easier schedule the second half, but who knows?
So Vanderbilt on the weekend, and obviously Drake Fellows, Raby, and the like, always going to have a lot of arms. What is working or not working for Vanderbilt when they win and lose series? What are kind of the swing things that they are doing or not doing in wins and losses?
Well, right now it's hitting. Their lineup, I think in the last 13 games, someone told me, they've got two guys hitting above 220. Julian Infante, who was their preseason first-team All-SEC first baseman, and the only kid they had that made preseason All-SEC, it's been on a slump that's literally spanned half the season. I think he's hitting, .156, something like that. They finally benched him the last two games of the Georgia series. Their offense got better once they did. They've got J.J. Blade, their right fielder, who's their best hitter. He's been out. He's got a strained oblique. You know how those things go. Those things can sideline you a couple of weeks or 2 or 3 months. We're waiting to see how that goes from there. But they've got some freshmen that are really good players. They got Pat DeMarco, who's playing right, who's a good hitter. Austin Martin, who's playing first for Infante, he's a best on base guy. And Phillip Clark, who is a catcher and a DH I really like. In fact, you might see their first three hitters are all freshmen, and they're really good. It's kind of been the veterans that have let them down. They had the top-rated junior class in the country when they came out of high school. Of course, one of those players died. Another one got kicked out of school. But the veterans really kind of let them down. But Connor Kaiser short is a really good player. I think defensively he could play short in the majors maybe right now. He's that good. And they're pitching. They've always got arms. Fellows have been really good. They haven't gotten Raby on track. And when they do, I think that helps them get a boost. And Mason Hickman's been really good on Sunday as a true freshman. Bullpen's kind of a question. They really don't still have to find roles about halfway through the season, but they've got some talented arms there. But I think that's like the place where, you know, if we get into the eighth and it's tied, that's where it could swing. And a lot of times that's not going really well for Vanderbilt in some instances.
Offensively, is this a typical Vanderbilt team that's going to try to run and use speed and that sort of thing?
Yeah, it is. They're really good at running. They've got Alonzo Jones, who plays center, who's probably the fastest kid in college baseball. He's a threat. They've got Austin Martin, who I think is or was leading the SEC in steals. He can really run. They're pretty efficient on the base pass. They will run into some outs, but it's really sometimes offensively, Chase, they're really boring. It is kind of become what everybody hates about baseball right now. It's that it's a lot of walks and a lot of strikeouts, which makes for long games and not a lot of action. And really, that's one of those things that, like, even when they're slumping, they're taking a lot of walks. They just can't put the ball in play. And that's really the key to their season. I think if they can start whiffing a little bit less and just putting the ball in play to where people have to make plays, they get a lot better if they can do that.
It's all those damn calisthenics. Those calisthenics have made guys faster, more agile, more flexible. It's good. I mean, the jumping jacks up and down the sideline, that's a game changer.
I think you're on to something. Is baseball not like the ultimate get off your lawn game, though? I mean, that just seems to drive people batty.
You know, it's funny. I watch it, and it's Chase can attest to this. On one hand, it drives me nuts, and on the other hand, I'm in love with it. I can't. It is total dichotomy for me. It's both at the same time. It irritates the hell out of me, and at the same time, I'm like, oh, that's genius to irritate people like this.
It's kind of like watching Marshall Henderson. If he's on your side, you love it, and if he's not on your side, then you think he's, you know, whatever.
Oh, it's a great – it's an absolute perfect comparison. And as someone who covered Marshall for a couple of years, he did both of those things to me all the time where I'd be like, man, what an annoying – and then I'd think, he's really annoying them, and it's in their head. Marshall got in people's heads. He absolutely did it. He added 5-6 points a game to Ole Miss sometimes by just getting in people's heads, fouls and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Is the Whistler still whistling?
Unfortunately, yeah.
Okay. So he's even hated by Vanderbilt people.
See, that's the one thing. The calisthenics don't bother me. I think they're kind of funny. They'll do some really funny things sometimes between innings. And they do that just to stay loose. And, I mean, they've got a coach who's at times has driven him pretty hard. I think it was one of the things that he used to just kind of keep them loose was, all right, go goof around the outfield and, you know, keep your muscles loose between innings. But the Whistler, I think you'll find that's almost unanimous that nobody likes that. And I don't understand. He drives everybody nuts, including their own fan base.
So how does it not stop? I mean, seriously, like, what is the pull here when you're hated by your own people at this point?
I know the guy. He's a really nice guy, but not, I don't like him. I just disagree with him. I think he is I think he thinks he's helping the team. And they claim that the players like it. I'm like, come on, man. They're not going to come to you and say, hey, stop it.
I don't know. Tim might, but if he really didn't like something. He didn't really approach me as the shy guy.
That's really not his style.
Okay.
I haven't known him for 15 years. I think perception probably of him nationally and regionally is different than dealing with him on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, of course.
The weird thing, Chase, is they used to have a really, I thought, loud, passionate crowd. And it's kind of turned it into a golf crowd because I think he's almost taken over to the point where there's not a lot of cheering that goes on anymore than when they hit a home run or something like that. It's really, I think he has sort of changed the whole fan dynamic almost by himself inside that ballpark.
Wow. That's strange. Took a break in our talk with Chris Lee to tell you the podcast is brought to you in part by Brandon White at Keys to Dream Travel. Completely free service. Specializing in Walt Disney World and Disney Cruise Line vacations. As that time for summer vacations get here, give them a call for stress-free planning, taking care of dining and fast pass reservations, transportation, and anything else related to your vacations. An expert in getting you out of lines and onto more rides no matter the crowds. You get a $25 Disney gift card for booking a vacation and mentioning the podcast. So contact him for a free, no-obligation quote at brandon@keystodreamtravel.com or 901-634-8687. Podcast also brought to you by Tyson Drugs. TysonDrugs.com is the place to check out to get your sildenafil. It is only, much, much cheaper than the other guys that have the little blue pill. This is the white pill. You can break in half, break into quarters, and take care of your knees with that. Has you ready in as little as 15 minutes. 662-252-252-252-2321 or TysonDrugs.com. Remember, they deliver wherever you are. Also now in Oxford with G&M Pharmacy there on South Lamar. And they deliver local to give you great hometown service, whatever you need in the pharmacy community. Podcast also brought to you by Community Mortgage, Oxford, Memphis, Soto County, and Chattanooga, 30 years old this year. And all underwriting and processing is done in Memphis. You're getting local underwriting that understands your market. Also a leader in condo financing and the float down option. So check out Jason at 662-234-2704 or JLOW, J-L-O-W-E at communitymtg.com. Now back with Chris Lee on the Billy's Vacans Hotline and the Oxford Exxon Podcast. You know, I ask you this because Neil and I talked about it last week. We were discussing, everybody talks about the Ole Miss State rivalry in baseball, and they play games, but it's not overly passionate to me compared to some other programs that Ole Miss plays. I mean, I think Ole Miss has a stronger baseball rivalry with Arkansas. I think they've got a stronger baseball rivalry in a weird way with Vanderbilt. That's kind of where I was going here. It seems like these games are always chippy. They're always kind of emotional. Last year in Oxford, the teams had to be separated on Sunday. They've had instances in Hoover over the years. Is that something that you see as well, or does Vanderbilt, for whatever reason, bring that out in a lot of teams, and that's more common there? How does that situation fly from a Vanderbilt perspective?
You know, I thought that really Vanderbilt changed perception a few years back. You know, with the 2007 team that was number one the whole year, and the 2013 team that was 26-3, and of course, when we went to national title, that changes perception. But I thought those programs, and this is going to sound silly, but like if you throw those elite seasons out, I think they've been almost the exact same program. They're built a lot alike with power pitching and with good defense and with speed. And I don't know, I think maybe similarity kind of gets annoying. I mean, I think their rivalries, Tennessee is one, obviously. Florida and Vanderbilt hate each other. And Florida knows how to get under their skin and beat them. And I think Ole Miss would probably be maybe third on that list somewhere, but I perceive it kind of like you do. I think that those are teams that they just both, for whatever reason, seem to get underneath each other's skin a little bit. I think it's a fun rival because, I mean, you tell me, I don't remember the last time that those two teams played a series, and I mean, I've been covering them for 13, 14, 15 years, that it wasn't pretty interesting to watch from start to finish.
Yeah, man, most of the time, you know, obviously both of them competitive, pretty high up in the standings. I mean, it has a lot to do with Ole Miss and Arkansas. It seems to just always kind of matter for whatever reason at that point. You know, it's funny because I don't know Tim Corbin. I've spoken to him a couple times, obviously press conferences. You talk about perception. What's the perception of Mike Bianco from an outside perspective?
I don't know that it gets talked about a lot here. Of course, he's, you know, their fan base, Chase, is so small. I feel like I'm sort of on the outside looking in at the rest of the SEC in terms of covering things because that Vanderbilt beat is so different. I mean, my perception of him, I don't have anything against him. I'm not a fan or I'm not against him particularly. I think he's a really good baseball coach. I do from the outside because I know he's kind of been – one of these guys, it was a little bit this way with Kevin Stallings at Vanderbilt, where people look on the outside and say, well, why aren't they happier with their success? Although I think Bianco's done a better job than Stallings did. I look at him, I think he's a really good baseball coach. I just don't think he's gotten, I guess they've not caught their share of breaks in terms of postseason. Probably going to Omaha that one time changed things from a little bit. I think he's a really good baseball coach, is my perception. I can't tell you what everybody in the fan base thinks of him. But I look at Ole Miss, I think that's a really solid program. And I think being really good for a while, and I say this as a guy that's been a Braves fan, it's kind of boring until you don't have it anymore. Like once they stop going to the playoffs and everything, you know, you're like, oh, they can't win the big one. And then they stop going. It's like, you know, that sure was nice when we went to the playoffs every year. That's kind of how I perceive Ole Miss baseball. I think he's done a really good job. I think just the perception of not having more postseason success, I'm sure, has hurt him.
What's going on with Vanderbilt football these days?
Probably headed towards another non-bowl season. The defense was awful a year ago. I think the offensive, they've got a chance to be fun to watch. Shermer's good if they can find some more receivers, which I think is going to be a big issue after spring. We've got a back named Keyshawn Vaughn, who I think is going to be really good. But, man, they were dreadful on defense a year ago. They set the all-time record for points allowed in the year. They changed defensive coordinators, which I think was good. That gets Derek Mason some time to focus on the head coaching end of things, which I think is where some details fell apart a year ago. But I just don't know that they've got enough talent. They've got some real holes in their secondary and an inside linebacker. And I think it's the schedule gets a little bit easier than it's been for them, but I just don't know that they've got enough talent to get back to a bowl.
What's the running back's name? Keyshawn what?
Keyshawn Vaughn.
Is he as lovable for Chase as Ralph Webb?
Ooh.
Chase, when you said something about a running back and you didn't say Ralph Webb, Chase, his whole body language, you didn't see it. His body language just kind of collapsed.
It's a new world. I haven't found my new, you know, kind of at least publicly second tier running back.
He's still alive. We could find him.
I know, but I'm like, it's not the same if I like go jump on the Benny Snell bandwagon or something.
No. That would be wrong. Yeah. You're going to have to start fresh with someone totally new. That's something. Yeah, I mean.
I'll tell you, Chris, all jokes aside, kind of felt bad for Ralph because I saw him in Oxford this past year, and there wasn't near as much tread on the tires as there were early in his career. I think playing Vanderbilt football for a little while certainly took a step or two away from him.
I remember I asked Andy Ludwig, their offensive coordinator, before his junior year. I said, I think he had 310 touches or something like that as a sophomore. And I said, are you guys, you know, worried about getting him worn down? No, we're going to be fine. And, you know, sure enough, I think last year, if he touched the ball, I think over 1,000 times in his career between rushes and catches. And
he
I
earned
think
his scholarship.
Show, oh, man, to say the least. And it might have cost him a little bit of money on the other side. I don't know that he's even going to get drafted, but I think he just got worn down.
Can you arrange, because I think you've got time. I think Ole Miss comes there in November. Is that right?
I think that's correct.
If Ralph is still in town, can you please arrange just a meet and greet kind of a thing between he and Chase? This needs to happen. It has been.
We could get him on the podcast for a few minutes.
That would be if you could help us get Ralph on the podcast, let Chase just kind of fall all over his man crush. This would be good. It would be good for everyone involved. I think it would help Chase get some closure. I really do. Chase is not one to talk about these emotional things like this, but I can tell that we need to start putting a bow on this, and it's not wrapped up just perfectly yet.
You know, I had two dogs that were 16, and I had to put them both down last year.
Yeah.
And it kind of feels like Chase feels at the moment, I think.
You think Chase needs to put Ralph Webb down? Hey, listen. Let me sign off this conversation right now if that's where it's going. You all are watching Barry on HBO or something, and it just you got to take a step back.
You know, it's like I'm sitting here in my office at home, and I've got this little futon right by my desk, and it's where Riley sat all this time, and I like to go, but I feel like he still should be there, and I just. I don't know. It kind of sounds like Chase when he's talking about Vanderbilt. It's like, you know, Ralph Webb's supposed to be there, but he's not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right now, Ralph's like, I have nothing to do with that podcast.
Oh, gosh. Is there obviously not the best season in the world? Any hope for Vanderbilt basketball moving forward? They've recruited pretty well, haven't they?
Well, they've got two kids that I went down to see in the McDonald's All-American game last week, which was a first. and they're really good. Man, Timmy Chatu, who is, I think, the number 7 player in the country. I don't remember where he wound up. Hurt his knee, but I think he's going to be okay. That kid is going to be unbelievable to watch. I look at his skill set, and I'm like, I don't know how there are 6 players in the country better than him. He's a 6'9", 6'10 guy who can handle the ball from the wing and got a little bit of a jump shot, and they've got a point guard named Darius Garland, who's local, who's going to be phenomenal for them. They're waiting on Romeo Langford, who's the top unsigned player in the country. He's supposed to make a decision in the next couple of weeks, and it's them, Kansas, and Indiana. They feel good, but everybody seems to feel good about that one, so I don't know where it's going to go. But I think if they can land him, you look at a team that's going to be preseason top 15, and I think they're going to be pretty good anyway. It's about to get a lot more interesting because they are in on a class of player that they have never been in on to this degree before, and I think people are pretty excited about that.
Well, Chris, as always, man, thanks for the time. Enjoy the series this weekend, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right, thanks, guys.
Our thanks to Chris Lee for joining us today on the show. The podcast is also brought to you by 7 South Tailgating. 7 South Tailgating is celebrating 10 years of business this season. Try 7 South Tailgating once and you'll never tailgate without them again. 7 South Tailgating will set up your own personal gear. You can rent everything from them. No one can match their customer service, their attention to detail. Trust us on this. They've been with us for a long time. You won't find anyone who'll tell you anything remotely negative about 7 South Tailgating. They do a great job. They make tailgating in the Grove super easy. 7SouthTailgating.com. Make sure you tell Kyle Thornton that you heard about it here on the podcast. We would appreciate that. Archibald Wright Moonlight Graham had two lifelong dreams before he passed away on August 25th, 1965. His first was to have one at-bat in the majors. His other was that a folk band would come along that was named after him, and that the Ole Miss Rebel Nation would become big followers of that band. Sadly, Moonlight Graham died with his dream of batting in the major leagues never coming true. However, you can make his second dream come true by listening to the Moonlight Grahams and going to see them on April 28th at World Music Nashville at 7 p.m. This would very much please the spirit of Moonlight Graham. So remember, their new album is out on iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, all of that. You can also get tickets at TicketZone.com. The podcast also brought to you by Harry Alexander. Harry is an Oxford-based RE/MAX Legacy Realty agent. He's been in Oxford more than four decades. No one knows the residential and condo market better than he does. Go to his site, HarryAlexander.com. Send him an email, ha at HarryAlexander.com. Podcast also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, that's the place to go. It's just off Interstate 55 in Grenada. They have a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissan vehicles. Go in, test drive one today. Tell Gene and Sandy that you heard about it here on the podcast. You'll get Rebel savings on top of the already awesome deals at Grenada Nissan. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com.
Thanks to Chris. Always good to talk to him. Baseball, basketball, football. Ralph Webb there in his separate category as well as we move forward without the Vanderbilt running back. We've had Zach Stacy and Ralph Webb over the years, and we'll see who is who's next. The Commodores game's in Nashville this year, not in Oxford. It's in Nashville this season. Let's see. What else is going on, Neil? I'm trying to think and kind of blocking out a little bit. I had so much thoughts about the whole Shea Patterson thing at the start of the podcast. Now I've sort of gotten all thrown off.
Yeah, I think we've kind of covered it, really. I wish someone at Ole Miss would kind of tell us what's going on. I understand the desire to be private and not have leaks and the fear of the NCAA and wanting to win this appeal and thinking that they have grounds for the appeal. I hope I'm wrong when I say this. Okay. Mm-hmm. I hope for Ole Miss's sake, for all of your sakes out there, I hope that Ole Miss wins its appeal. I hope that they become bowl eligible, all of those things. Forgive me for being remarkably skeptical and cynical. If you made me bet, I'll bet that they stay bowl ineligible in 2018.
Yeah, I expect the unofficial visitor restriction that's really stupid to be waived and everything else to remain, if you just made me guess.
And they've kind of already overcome that with all of these early commitments. That's what a lot of this is about.
Well, and also because the appeals process is taking a while, they're not bound to that rule. They're getting the early dudes anyway.
Yeah.
I mean,
so they're going to get them in this summer.
There's a stay for that until it's over.
Yeah.
I think this thing could drag into August.
Oh, I do too. And then worst case, his kids can only come for one football game. You know, I don't know how many games they're going to come to anyway.
It's a weird hindrance is what it is.
Right. So there's that. I'm trying to think what else is going on in the world of sports.
There's really not much. I mean, Ole Miss plays a game in Pearl. Wouldn't be bad to win it, but not the end of the world either way. It's a midweek game against a good team. Those aren't going to kill you. Ole Miss's non-conference strength of schedule is really, 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 really bad. And the committee has gotten weird at times where that's actually affected seating and host and different things. So just something to kind of follow there. I was looking at it a little last night, and you never know what that committee is going to focus on, but that is one of the things they could at least focus on. And as of right now, Ole Miss not doing too well in that category. They scheduled really well. I mean, it's not Mike's fault. You do it several years in advance, but they've caught that year where everybody kind of sucks that they They scheduled in non-conference weekends. Long Beach State not giving them anywhere near what they expected. Long Beach was a 14 RPI last year at the end of the season, and that is not the case right now for the Dirtbags. So just a thought there.
NBA playoffs still not set.
Non-conference strength of schedule for Ole Miss 217 as of this
morning.
That's
not good.
Now, the non-conference RPI is 12.
I don't know.
Whatever. Go ahead.
Win games. Win league games.
Win league games, yes.
That's always been kind of my thing. I think I'm right.
It's not a uniform, unilateral
right.
deal, but, I mean, Ole Miss has been 20-10 in the league before and not been a national seed.
There was probably some weirdness there.
I don't remember. It was 2009.
Get to 19-11 and you're hosting a regional.
19-11 is going to be hard to do.
I know. 18-12 is going to put them on the bubble.
For what?
Hosting a regional.
18-12, you'll host. I think 17-13, you host.
Okay.
Yeah, I feel pretty good about them hosting at 17-13, which is about where I'd have them right now, honestly.
Where are they now? They're 5-4?
They're 7-5.
7-5. I've completely lost track. 7-5. Yeah, it's kind of what they're on pace for. Need to make sure they get one in Vandy.
Oh, for sure. I mean, they're the better team. Get two, but you never know. Road series are tough. You brought up golf without even my prodding this morning.
Yeah, two things occupied my evening last night. Believe it or not, it wasn't Shea Patterson.
Okay.
The NBA playoffs are coming up. Tomorrow is the last day of the regular season, and the Western Conference is wild. It's if you like pro basketball. The Western Conference playoffs are going to be very, very good. And the Eastern Conference playoffs have a couple of young teams, the Sixers, the Pacers, especially the Sixers, that are really fun to watch. This has a chance, we'll see, because it might end up being Golden State and Cleveland for the 80th straight year. But we have a chance to have a really interesting NBA playoffs. But mainly the story, even more than that, on a night when Anthony Davis was the best player in the world, on a night when the Thunder played their best half of the season in Miami, looked like a championship-caliber team. On a night when the Spurs looked like the Spurs, even with a bunch of dudes that you don't know who they are. The story that kept grabbing my attention is this Patrick Reed story. He won the Masters, which is not the part that grabbed my attention, because a whole bunch of dudes have won the Masters.
Okay, let me set this up. What did you know about Patrick Reed entering a week ago?
Nothing.
Literally nothing.
I knew that he was the name of a golf player that you and Jeffrey talked about. And that he must be kind of big because y'all always made fun of his physique.
You didn't know about his Ryder Cup exploits or anything along those lines?
No.
Okay, go ahead.
I know that makes me a...
No, you're fine. I was just trying to set up...
I knew nothing.
Okay.
So I'm just sponging on this dude.
Okay.
I literally knew nothing. I knew he was a professional golfer. He could have walked into the room with four other people and you could have said, which one's the golfer? And I'd have been like, I don't know. One of them.
Yeah.
This thing with his family is bizarre.
We talked about it a little yesterday.
And I can't decide. Now, I read the story on golf.com with the guy, what's his name?
Alan Shipnick.
You told me, I didn't know this. You told me people are ripping the writer, the author of the story, the reporter. I thought the story was incredibly well done. He went and spent part of the day with
Reed's family.
Yeah. He also asked
Golf.com is a part of Sports Illustrated, by the way.
Okay.
People.
He had someone in the media, in the room, ask Patrick Reed to his face, do you wish that you – is there any part of you that wishes that you could spend that regrets that you're not able to share this with your parents and your younger sister? And he gave the quote right now.
I think Shipnick called it cold-blooded, or somebody did.
He called it cold-blooded, and it is kind of cold-blooded. Quote, I'm just out here to play golf and to win golf tournaments. In response to that question, that's pretty cold-blooded.
As we said yesterday, he has gone out of his way to get signed documents about not cheating, but never, ever, ever mentions his family.
And I think he was intending to cheat that day when he hit the ball into the rough and he goes into the start ahead into the rough and there's a ball right there on the edge and you're like, oh, hit it. Oh, that's cheating. Now, I'm less interested in that because he paid the price for that, you know. I'm more interested in this family thing because It sounds to me, from everything I've been able to read, and I don't believe this for a minute. Let me say this. I've heard you say it's got to be something more. I'm totally with you. There's got to be something more, which is why I'm more interested in it. He got married at 22, mm-hmm. which everybody out there is typically not a great decision. He got married at 22, and his family said, hey, maybe you're moving a little fast. And he went, that's it. I'm done. I'm done with my family. Come on now. That's like counting to 10. And you say 1, 2, 10. You skipped 3 through 9.
Let me ask you this. We talk all the time about forgiving societies and people. I mean, it's what's made the podcast probably listenable to a lot of people is we take a lot of human elements with this. Tiger Woods, beloved figure. Dustin Johnson, for the most part, beloved figure. Weird stuff in the past. Mickelson's had some weird crap go on. One of the most beloved people in golf history.
Well, no one, except for the people who are holier than thou, no one ever really, I think the average person knows that we're all human. We're all flawed.
That's where I'm going for this. Yeah. I mean, Brendan Porath for SB Nation wrote an article yesterday about how Augusta never cheered for him. That in Augusta, you don't have cell phones. Cell phones are off limits on the property. I don't know if you know that or not. You can't have a phone.
I knew that.
Okay, so for the players, they've got a lot of blind tee shots where they're hitting into areas and they're kind of counting on the crowd to tell them if it's good or bad, a moan or a cheer or a roar or whatever. And with Patrick yesterday or on Sunday, you couldn't tell by his gallery. They didn't cheer for him to the level for them to know where the ball was going or where it ended up on the green. Rory had plenty more of a following. Ricky, Spieth, obviously. All still held against him potentially for what he did as a 17-year-old at the University of Georgia. Pays for it, goes to Augusta College. As we said, from a golf standpoint, it's become somewhat of a national hero for how he's played in team match play events. What is holding the world back from the forgiveness for him other than the fact that he doesn't acknowledge or pour out his feelings? Is that what it is?
I don't know.
That he doesn't lay the burden down to the feet of the people, if you will?
I don't know. I'm just in the very infancy of getting to know
it's
this
weird,
story.
Though, because
it's bizarre.
He doesn't get that break that everyone else gets when they do something stupid and then move on with their lives.
So did the reason that the world fell in love with Tiger Woods at the beginning, was it because of Earl? And when he won at the Masters, he hugged his dad and he cried and all that stuff. And then when he had the adultery and all of that stuff and he had the accident, we all got... And not we all, but you know what I mean. As a society, we got angry, and then we forgave, and then we cheered for him. What is it about this guy's story? He hasn't killed anybody. What has he done? I don't understand why he's so hated in a game full of, let's face it, there's a lot of prima donnas in professional golf. There are a lot of spoiled white boys in professional golf. Now, I'm not making – they're gifted, and they've worked their asses off to get where they are. But let's not – act like they had to come out of the streets of Compton to get there either. I mean, what did this guy do that makes him such a bad guy?
Because when you talk to all the players, nobody necessarily loves him, but they all go, yeah, he's nice enough. He's fine.
Okay, he keeps to himself.
He is a very solitary figure. Like, they made the point that on Monday, there was a practice round going on Monday at the Masters. Practice rounds Monday, Tuesday, par three contest Wednesday. Tournament starts on Thursday for anybody that's not a golf
pick. Yes.
All right, so on Monday, Tiger Woods is playing with Justin Thomas and Fred Couples, three really popular players, huge galleries for a Monday. I mean, Fred Couples is that really cool guy that won it in 92 that everybody still loves, all good. So they're playing the Masters together, and, I mean, crowds, huge roars. Patrick was playing by himself with headphones on right behind them. Just one hole back, waiting on them to finish, and then whatever. And it's just it's that type of...
But he wasn't doing anything. He let them play. He wasn't worried about
it. No, he's never a problem. It's never an issue.
He wasn't like complaining, hey, Tiger, you're taking too damn long. Let me play through. He just waited his turn.
Oh, yeah, he was hitting multiple balls, putt from all parts of the green, whatever.
Just minding his own business.
Yeah. But he gets a lot of criticism for not being in today's world of professional golf, where everybody's on the greens, and even though they're competing, they're all kind of fist-bumping each other, and they're all friends, and they're all kind of in on the joke that they're under 30 years old and multimillionaires playing golf.
Sure.
he's not in that group, and for some reason that has made him an outcast with the golf community. And then they pile on the cheating and the other stuff, and it just sort of...
They're holding him accountable for stuff he did at 17.
Yeah, a decade ago. He's 27. I think he's 27.
I mean, my daughter turned 17 in 3 weeks. I'm not saying she shouldn't be responsible for her actions, but when she's 30 years old...
There should be a forgiveness.
Yeah. Come on, they're kids.
It's what it is. It's all of these elements.
Maybe he's not really comfortable in the social thing. Hell, I wear headphones at Kroger.
Well, I mean, he might have some semblance of the same thing. You know, the lone golfer that I saw, like, okay, Ricky Fowler had finished right in front of him, so he came and congratulated him. The only golfer that I saw that waited for him to really acknowledge him was Bubba Watson. They might have a lot of similarities, honestly.
To middle Sunday.
Yeah. After he won the Masters, Bubba was the only guy that had finished way earlier that I noticed waited on Patrick to greet him off the green on Sunday. Like I said, Ricky was already kind of there, so he walked over and hugged him and all that stuff. I think Spieth did the same thing. But Bubba was the one dude that changed his plans to make sure he was greeting Patrick off the green.
You know what will be interesting next April? Seriously, you're going to laugh, but I mean it. The Champions Dinner thing is going to be really interesting.
You think so?
Well, because it sounds like no one really knows the wife either. Like they.
Well, she's not invited to the dinner now.
Oh, it's just
the dudes.
She'll probably have a say in what gets picked.
No doubt about that. I expect a lot of meat. He's a big cooker. He's actually a real big like barbecue grill cook. Like they rent houses at most tournaments for her parents, the family, and he like cooks all the meals. It's kind of his stress relief at night after the rounds.
It's just fascinating. So he's in Augusta for a week, 3 miles from his family.
That is correct.
3 miles.
They can't go to the course. They know they'll be removed if they show up, and he knows they're there. They sit at home, watch on TV, and deal with the emotions of what is happening.
Meanwhile, they don't know their two grandchildren.
No.
They've never met them.
Ever.
I can't imagine.
I don't know that Patrick's necessarily a complex guy, but it's very a complex situation.
Well, I'd love to know like what really happened. It's got to be more than the parents were like, hey, I think you're moving too fast. I think 22 might be a little young to get married. You might not be ready to get married. You should slow down.
Reed up to, 11th in the world after this week.
Well, winning the Masters will help your RPI.
However you figure that up.
Yeah. It's crazy. I don't.
Four of the top six players in the world as of today are Americans no older than about 26. So, I know he, like I said, it's a fascinating story. I don't know that he personally is that fascinating, but the story is very fascinating. I think he, in a lot of ways, is very simple.
Well, he is on one hand very comfortable in his own skin.
Oh, no doubt about that.
And on the other hand,
he thrives off conflict on the course.
Yes.
He thrives and gets amped up off being the villain, if you will.
Yeah.
He walked to the tee box on Sunday and noticed and pointed out that he got a decent enough applause, but then they roared for Rory. He kind of used that. That's fuel for him on the course.
But that doesn't make him unique at all. There's a lot of guys.
No.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys.
It's just uncommon in golf.
Yeah.
That's the whole deal is for an American that as good as he is with the story he has just on the golf course, it is unheard of for him to have the lack of a following that he does. Talking about it, he's more successful than Ricky Fowler on the golf course. And Ricky Fowler is beloved
Why?
By the golf world.
Why?
He wears bright colors and kids really flock to him.
Okay.
Good dude, good looking dude.
Yeah.
Normal PR stuff. Like the golf world almost is like this golf world, inside golf people kind of look at Fowler and go, eh. You know, they kind of get turned off by all his other stuff. But I mean, look, credit to him. He's made capitalism a great thing. Yeah, that's Farmers Insurance pays him a lot of money
But Patrick Reed sort of looks like the boy next door. He's a normal looking dude.
Yeah.
He's good looking. I mean, he's a good looking guy. He's a better looking guy than I am. I mean,
I'm not ugly.
Yeah, I mean, he's not ugly.
It's fine.
It's fine.
Yeah.
Normal looking. If he were walking through Kroger, you wouldn't think anything.
Well,
one way
no,
or the
you
other.
Know, it's the running joke. We always probably irritates him. You know, they're both Callaway guys and look sort of similar. Jonathan Randolph gets confused for Patrick Reed on the course sometimes.
I can see that.
They'll yell for Patrick when it's Jonathan.
Really?
Yeah, occasionally. Yeah. That's kind of a thing.
Well, not for you to expose a friend, but what does Jonathan say about Reed?
He played with him 2 years ago in a tournament, and I think he said he was pleasant. It's fine. I mean, you know, whatever.
He's kind of off to himself.
Yeah, I mean, and that's pretty common. I mean, I don't think a lot of them are chit-chatting down every fairway. I mean, you're
right.
You're dealing with your own business and trying to figure out what's going on. You're not...
Yeah, you're planning your next golf shot.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, he's just a solitary figure. That's at the end of it, that's all this is from a golf course standpoint.
It just seems to be one hell of a conviction rate here for that. I mean, I don't understand why that's so bad. I guess I'm telling you that right now I'm cheering for
it's
Patrick
because
Reed.
the world wants him to get down on a knee and show remorse. They want a pound of flesh. The golf world, for whatever reason, wants a pound of flesh from Patrick Reed.
For a DUI?
For just whatever. Yeah, for that, for cheating, for the weird family situation. They just want him to open up. They want him to be the dude that lets them in a little
bit. So they want him to get on 60 Minutes and sob.
Or whatever. Yeah, give him a little personal something. They just want a personal snippet of him, and I think it would chill. But he's not going to do that. It's not him.
Doesn't sound like it.
I mean, even Bubba's a lot more open than that. I mean, you know a lot about Bubba and his family and the adoption and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Nah, Patrick, no.
But not everybody's super public like that.
No. Well, I mean, look, he's all right. He got $1.98 million for winning a golf tournament in a green jacket. He's going to be okay tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, I know. But you know he knows that he's taking a beating publicly.
Well, it's got to be frustrating because, in his mind, hey, I'm as good as these other dudes. What's the deal?
I mean, he should be the guy that's on Good Morning America and...
He probably will be anyway, but he was a hate.
What's interesting is if you're him and you go on Jimmy Fallon and Jimmy Fallon says to you, so you hadn't talked to your family in 6 years. What's up with that?
Oh, you know, in a pre-interview, it's completely off limits. You mention it and you're.
But that's where as a journalist, this is the journalism part of the story.
Jimmy Fallon. Let's not go journalist with Jimmy Fallon on the.
But even Jimmy Fallon has to say, I have to ask.
He won't do the interview. It will be pre-whatever this gets mentioned, I'm out. Will not discuss it. Refusal.
And so if you're 60 Minutes and you're going to do, seriously.
Yeah.
If you're 60 Minutes and you're going to do this interview with Patrick Reed.
Patrick wouldn't do the interview though.
And so you, 60 Minutes yourself.
He did a Faraday interview and I think they glossed over it a little bit and Faraday asked the question but got no substance whatsoever.
But that's my point, is you'd have to say, I have to ask you this. If you don't let me ask you this, if that's a non-starter, then this interview's a non-starter. I have to ask this. Otherwise, I look weak as a journalist.
At what point, though, I'm just kind of asking as we wrap up. This is not a new thing. This has been going on since 2012. At what point does it become a non-story?
Hold that thought. I'll answer that in a second. First, let me tell you, Ole Miss fans living in or moving to Dallas, if you're looking to buy or sell a home in the Metroplex, give Lauren Valick Ferris with Briggs Freeman Sotheby's a call. A rebel by marriage, Lauren specializes in East Dallas and has a network that extends throughout the DFW Metroplex. Lauren loves cheering on the Rebs, and she would love to help Rebel fans in Dallas or moving to Dallas sell their home or find and buy their new one. Lauren's consistently ranked as a top agent producer in D Magazine and was recently named a 2017 Advocate Top 10 Realtor in the Lakewood, East Dallas area. So whether you're moving home, buying, selling, or referring a friend in one of the hottest housing and job markets in the country, you need a realtor who knows the town. Call Lauren at 469-867-1734 or go to her website, laurenandkelly.com. Podcast also brought to you by Journey Business Solutions. If you are a business with a high-ticket product or service, HVAC, dentist, surgeon, flooring, furniture, Ben Brown and his team have the best financing solution for your customers. Their program accesses 14 national lenders with one very easy online application. with rates as low as 4.9%, terms that extend to 7 years, loan amounts up to $100,000, and credit scores down to 580. They will get more of your customers the money they need so you don't lose a sale. To hear more about this, call Ben Brown at 443-935-5013. Ben is waiving the setup fee for Oxford Exxon podcast listeners. That's a $500 savings, so call him today. And the podcast is brought to you by Gambrell & Associates. Gambrell & Associates have three attorneys with more than 60 years of combined experience and more than 45 years handling only bankruptcy and Social Security disability claims. Check out their site, msbnkr.com, or by searching for Robert Gambrell on superlawyers.com or avvo.com. Superlawyers only selects the top 5% of lawyers in the state. Gambrell & Associates handle Social Security disability claims statewide and in Memphis. For more information, call the office in Hernando, 662-342-7700, or in Oxford, 662-281-8800. So when does it not?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's already 6 years old. It's not like it's the first time he won a tournament yesterday.
It's funny. On one hand, I say it's none of our business. On the other hand, it's always...
I mean, he wins a U.S. Open in 2027. You still have to deal with the question?
No, because I think by then there's an understanding. I mean, frankly, I think he could win the U.S. Open in 2018, and it's not as big of a story. But it's still a story because it's... Look, like you said, we live in an era when you can see these people every day. You can watch every tournament. You can read countless things about them. Like, for example, I didn't know who the hell he was before Sunday afternoon. And here we sit on Tuesday morning, and I know a lot about him.
I mean, in some ways, golf is a more immersive sport to follow if you really wanted to deep dive than any other sport, in a way.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that.
The way the media coverage is, I mean, I could seriously listen to four golf podcasts a day with new information, and the way the tournament schedule is, it's 52 weeks a year, basically.
Yeah,
I can do something golf-related every day.
It's one of the reasons NASCAR dropped the ball, because NASCAR could have had a following similar to this, because you get to know the individual people.
Right.
The NBA is good about this. You know who Jimmy Butler is. You know Anthony Davis's story. You know what makes Russell Westbrook tick. People want to know who these people are. They want to cheer for the people, and you can see their faces. There's no uniform. There's no helmet. They're not geared. You know, you can see them.
That's why I want to see how Nike promotes him moving forward. What do they do from a marketing standpoint?
What's interesting is everybody seems so scared of him, and I don't see where he's anything resembling.
Nike signed him in December, I think. He was a Callaway guy, switched to Nike for clothing. He was not on the Nike Golf website until Saturday afternoon.
It's bizarre.
They put him on their website Saturday afternoon.
It's bizarre.
And yet, top 20 player in the world.
And look, I love Tiger. I'm cheering for Tiger. This is not knocking Tiger. I'm for Tiger. But, like, it would be easy for Tiger to be hated based on just his personal life. And yet we all cheer for Tiger. I mean, if Tiger Woods wins the U.S. Open, how pumped is our most just average Joe going to be? We're going to be sitting in our living rooms watching Tiger Woods walk down the 18th. A lot of people are going to be like tears of joy for this guy and this redemption story and all the work, and we're invested in him, and we don't really know why, but we are. And yet this guy hasn't done really anything that wrong, and everybody hates him. I don't get it.
He's 27 years old, just won the Masters, born in Texas, went to college in Georgia, has won six times on the PGA Tour, ranked 11th in the world, and has at least a top 15 finish in every major of all four majors.
Married with two kids.
Yep.
Seems to be an okay dad.
Not robbing liquor stores out on Friday night.
I mean, he's not beating his kids.
No.
I don't know. Yet we all want to.
This is what kind of drives me a little nuts, though, from a golf person's perspective. Masters, no, we hate him, whatever. People will be losing their damn minds about him, though, in September when he goes and beats some European in the dang Ryder Cup in September. Suddenly, because it's a team format, I can pull for him, and he's my guy. Well, in the individual tournaments, no.
Well, now I'm kind of like Jeffrey now. There does come a point where you have to wrap yourself in the red, white, and blue. And all those pent-up emotions about Portugal have to come out.
He appears to be more well-liked in Europe. I follow one particular pro in Europe that does a lot of videos on the internet and stuff. And he kind of ran some polls. And the Europeans kind of appreciate his fire a little bit.
Yeah.
And kind of like him. He's much more liked in Europe than he is America. Even though he's been their nemesis.
It's like last night. It's a totally different thing, but it's a similar kind of personality. People were on the internet criticizing. Are you familiar with Russell Westbrook's quest for a second straight triple-double?
I am, yeah.
He went into last night needing 34 rebounds in the final two games of the season at Miami last night, against Memphis at home tomorrow night.
So he needs 17 per.
Yeah. And the Thunder got off to a terrible start. They were down 18 in the first quarter. Couldn't have had a worse first quarter.
Okay.
And Russell Westbrook did. If you follow Russell Westbrook like I have for the last 8 years, Russell Westbrook did what Russell Westbrook does. All right, you sons of bitches, I'm going to put this thing on my back and I'm going to go get it. Because he is competitive. If Russell Westbrook were a golfer, he would be the guy with headphones on the day before the master started. And he would be the guy that when the crowd cheered for Rory, he'd say, all right, that's it.
So it's Patrick Reed.
In a lot of ways. Now, the difference is Russell Westbrook and his mom and dad and brother are super tight. That is his core. Russell Westbrook's like one of the few NBA players that doesn't have like a posse. He's got his dad, his mom, his wife, his brother, and now his son. That's it. That's his group.
I want you to finish. 30-second aside, has this year been bad for him, showing that maybe he's overrated because he hasn't been able to build up a team around stars and win games as high as these two?
No, because if you go back, if you go and look at it, the two stars on his team, Paul George and Carmelo Anthony, have had the worst years of their career shooting.
Okay, which had no impact on him whatsoever. Okay.
No, the people who have watched him, know that for whatever reason, Melo and Paul have missed shots. It'll be interesting if they have another year together. What he's done in the development of Steven Adams and Jeremy Grant probably speaks more to Russell Westbrook, the point guard, than anything else.
Go ahead.
But last night, he had 18 rebounds. And in the second half, dude was getting rebounds. And people were like, he's chasing rebounds. I mean, no, he's trying to beat the Miami Heat. And getting rebounds, if you watch the Thunder night in and night out, and I do, you know that Russell Westbrook getting rebounds is part of their transition game. If he gets the rebound, no one has to pass him the ball to get out in space, and there's nobody faster in the league on the break than Russell Westbrook. He creates lot. He had 30-something, 18, and 13, I think, last night, something crazy. People we're funny about, we decide that we don't like someone as a society, and by God, whatever fits that narrative, even if it's twisting it, that's what we do. We want people to be, we in the media are the worst about it. We complain when people give us cliches, and then when we get someone who's different, who says things that interesting. Oh, now we hate the guy. Why can't you just blend in with the group? And we just complained about everybody blending in with the group.
Mm-hmm.
I sort of support the right of people being different.
Yeah.
It doesn't bother me if Patrick Reed plays the whole damn tournament wearing headphones.
I think it's illegal, but...
But I don't care if he plays his practice round wearing headphones and just kind of getting off into his own world. I'm cool with that. He doesn't owe me anything. I imagine if I'm watching him live, I'm watching him hit golf shots where I'm kind of like I was with Jonathan that day going, whoa. Oh, that's different. Because I'm like, I'm watching you and the other guys, and y'all are hitting some pretty good shots. And I'm like, oh, that's pretty good. And then all of a sudden, Jonathan's like, boom. And I'm like, oh, now that's different. It's kind of like when you go to an NBA game and you sit down close enough to see Russell Westbrook live, you're like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, now that's different. Yeah. I'm kind of a fan of that. You know, when you sit behind home plate and you watch Max Scherzer two hit the Braves, for example, and you're watching some of the stuff that he throws, you just go, well, that's that's different. I don't know. I'm not sure I completely understand it, but it makes it interesting.
Yeah. So anyway, thanks to Chris for joining us today. We'll have more as the week moves on. Talk to you tomorrow.